Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The campaign and election of 2016 were a kind of wake-up call to America about the depth of political divisions in this country and the extent to which many Americans have come to not understand each other's view of the world. In the aftermath of that election, we promised a national listening tour to try to step into that gap. Today, it begins. We are in Charlotte, North Carolina, in a state once seen as a beacon of moderation, but now maybe the most politically polarized state in the country. There are fierce battles here over voting rights, gerrymandering, government powers, even gender and bathroom use. This week, new Democratic Governor Roy Cooper was sworn in, but state Republicans curbed his power before he even took office. This hour on Point, from North Carolina, we are listening to America. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you followed the hot politics of North Carolina? What is the conversation we need to have with one another after the election of Donald Trump about how to move forward in this country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're streaming Facebook Live this hour. WFAE, our host station here in Charlotte. You can find it at WFAE Radio on Facebook or at On Point Radio. And be happy if you are watching as we dive in right along with us. We've invited four North Carolina citizens to sit down with us today to kick off our listening tour. One is still in traffic and will join us soon. But let me introduce who's here with me in the studio in Charlotte, North Carolina. Duncan Wilson is here. He's a financial planner, a Republican, former attorney, married with a toddler, and a Charlotte native. Duncan Wilson, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Tom.
LaWanna Mayfield is here, a three-term Charlotte City Councilwoman and Democrat. She made history as Charlotte's first elected openly gay official. LaWanna Mayfield, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And Craig Horn is here, Republican fourth-term state representative for North Carolina's 68th District. He served in the Air Force Security Services in the 1960s, a Russia expert, I think, and after decades in business, turned to politics. Craig, it's great to have you right with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Amber Logan is on her way, and we hope that she joins us in just a moment. You know, the whole country's been watching North Carolina in a kind of amazement. This, Duncan, was a state that was seen as the sort of moderate oasis in the South, a place the business of North Carolina was business, and it boomed here. You had progressives moving here from around the country because it looked like such an interesting place to be. One way or another, the parties managed to get along, maybe with the, was business kind of the leavening factor? But in the last few years, it just seems like North Carolina has turned into a raw political battleground. Why, Duncan? What's going on?
Well, I think it was 2010 when the Republicans took back the legislature for the first time since 1898. So I think we had a political party that was very much not used to being in power that suddenly had power. And I think they've been tackling issues that weren't exactly the most important. And I think that's really the root cause of it, was a party that never had power suddenly got it.
And you're talking, when you say not that important, you're talking about maybe cultural issues and maybe the whole issue over House Bill 2 and gender and bathroom use that exploded into such a big deal in North Carolina.
They said they cut taxes, but mine went up.
All right. LaWanna, maybe this is cultural, but it wasn't only, I mean, not to diminish cultural issues. They're very big. But we're talking here about voting rights. We're talking about districts have been drawn. We're talking about the very power of the incoming, recently narrowly elected Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. And, of course, you had Pat McCrory signing this bill coming out of the legislature. Craig, we'll ask you about it. But that essentially stripped the incoming Democratic governor of a whole lot of powers before he could even take office. These are not necessarily peripheral issues that have become so deeply polarized, LaWanna.
You're absolutely right. But I think the bigger conversation is really a rural versus urban conversation.
Rural versus urban.
Right. When we really look at the landscape that we've seen in the General Assembly over the last few years, even when you look at the lines and the way they were redrawn, you had both Republicans and Democrats who were drawing those lines and who are part of that committee. You have Democrats who created an all-white Democratic district and drew minorities out of their district. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the real impact, and as was just said, when we really look at business and the business of business, we recognize that we have lost hundreds of millions of dollars with an anticipation of an even greater number when you think of corporations and identifying the best of the best and looking at the full impact of what HB2 did to our state.
HB2, this was the legislation that says you must use the bathroom of your biological gender at birth.
Which is interesting since our governor has no idea and mentioned where his birth certificate is. So that means he should not be able to use any public restroom.
Oh, because there's no record. Come on.
But that is just how simple it boils down to. But people forget that HB2 instituted a lot more than that. It took away municipalities' ability to really govern for ourselves. And our most recent former governor was formerly the mayor of the city of Charlotte.
When Charlotte had moved ahead with more kind of progressive legislation.
Exactly.
And reined back in by the state legislature.
He always said, let municipalities rule themselves. We know how to govern best. But then once in a position in the state, I don't think he had the ability to change the minds of the legislatures who overruled, what, four vetoes that he attempted?
Craig Horn, you're in the state legislature, a Republican there. You've been there for a while now. You've watched North Carolina for a long time. What happened here? How did the comity, how did the sense of live and let live, or at least we've got to make this state work, how did it come apart, if that's the right way of putting it, Craig?
Well, I don't think it's the right way of putting it, Tom. I don't think our state has come apart. You've picked out one issue.
Oh, no, not one issue. We can talk about voting districts. We can talk about, yes, HB2. We can talk about what happened with the incoming governor. I mean, there's a laundry list, and we'll go through them.
That's great.
But I mean, there has been an awful lot of cries of what is happening coming out of North Carolina, and we didn't used to hear that. So what's happened?
Like in all things, there's no single thing that happened. No one threw a switch and it was all different. Mm-hmm. When the Republican majority came into power, we were elected in 2010. We actually came into power in 2011.
Yep.
This state faced a near $3 billion budget shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the throes of the worst recession since the Great Depression. Unemployment was terrible. We had a big hill to climb.
Yep.
And we took that on. It was mentioned about taxes. We've reduced taxes. As a matter of fact, beginning in January of this year, just a week or so ago, our personal tax rate and our corporate tax rate are among the lowest in our surrounding states and among the lowest in the nation.
Mm.
We have made up the budget deficit. We've taken on a number of issues that had that were many of them a result of the recession, but some of them result of the political activity of one party being in power for 140 years, as was mentioned. And whatever party's in power for that length of time, there's going to be some change.
And so is the Democrats before Republicans came in 2010, 2011.
Now, we did get into, for me personally, we got into more social issues than I care to get into. I'm an education guy.
Okay.
I focus on education.
Mm-hmm.
But many of these things that we've gotten into are, there's a lot of ways to look at them. I'm not going to try and make any excuses. There were times back in 1995, as an example, and I realize that's 22 years ago.
It is a long time ago, yeah, but still.
But there was this kind of wholesale change back then, and it was a different time, different things. We have, the Republican majority is attempting to get us back to the origins of our state constitution, to ensure that people are held accountable. You talked about taking power away from the governor. The Constitution's very clear about what powers each position has And what we've done in the last few weeks, yep. months, is to restore much of that to what the Constitution of North Carolina says. And I'll give you a couple of examples.
And yet you know that norms have been overturned. You know that sure. the way that everybody worked here for a long time has been turned around and turned around very fast, and only after the loss by the Republican Governor Pat McGrory. You know the kind of criticism that you're getting even from people right here in your own state, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm sure you saw this, but Andrew Reynolds there, political science guy writing in the Raleigh News and Observer, that North Carolina, after the redrawing of districts here, electoral districts, is now, to he says, sort of ensconce the GOP, he says, is now a deeply flawed, partly free democracy that is only ahead of the failed democracies that constitute much of the developing world. He puts North Carolina ranking in terms of the electoral integrity right alongside Cuba, Indonesia, and Sierra Leone. That's got to hurt, Craig.
Sure, it hurts, but it also... I consider the fact that that's one person's opinion.
Well, this is a standard that's used all over the world to judge the health of democracies.
There are other standards as well, and there are other people that have done evaluations as well. I don't happen to agree with his conclusions.
Yeah, Duncan,
if I can jump in there,
please.
I think it is a flawed scale because I don't remember Pat McCrory throwing political opponents in jail like they do in Cuba.
But this has been applied to countries all over the world, but you don't want to apply to North Carolina.
I think when you try and take something that's as much of an amoeba as is electoral democracy and try and throw down guardrails on it and try and measure one against the other.
And yet, that's exactly what this scale is designed to do, and it's been applied everywhere. Applied everywhere else, but not here.
But it's going to be flawed in some areas.
Mm.
Now, are we gerrymandered to an extreme degree? Yeah. It's silly how much we're gerrymandered. However, North Carolina is not Cuba. We're not Zimbabwe. We're not the Philippines where they're killing people on the street. So, yeah, do we have our problems? Yes. But I think that guy was writing an article to get a great headline and get press.
How does it feel to have to assert that, you know, we're not Zimbabwe, we're not Cuba, in defense of your home state, Duncan?
Not great.
Yeah.
But
I bet it doesn't.
I really think that Chapel Hill guy was writing to get a great headline to be mentioned today.
We'll see. But here we are in 2017, a place where North Carolina was not at all, not many years ago. And here we are. What do you hear out of North Carolina? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are kicking off a year-long On Point listening tour of America today. First stop, Charlotte, North Carolina. And we are here listening for what people think of our politics now, our priorities, our future, in what has become one of the most divided, embattled, politically, states in the nation. You can join us today. What's the conversation we need to have with one another about how to move forward in this country? Are you able to talk with friends, relatives, neighbors on the other side of the political divide? Do you have friends and neighbors on the other side of the political divide? Or have we all huddled in our camps these days? And what's the difference in outlook and perspective that divides right and left, Trump and non-Trump these days in North Carolina and beyond? We are at the studios of public radio station WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina. Craig Horn is with us. He is in the North Carolina General Assembly, representative there in his fourth term. Luana Mayfield is with us, a Charlotte City Councilwoman in her third term there. Duncan Wilson is with us, financial planner, former attorney, 33 years old, two-year-old son here, Charlotte native, Republican with us. And at the table with us now as well, Amber Logan, who just managed to find us. And Amber, we're so happy to see you. Independent college counselor, 40-something years old now, mother to a teenage daughter, a Democrat. Amber, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Amber, we've been talking about sort of the state of politics in North Carolina. You moved here, and you have, since you moved here, seen what's unfolded. What kind of state did you think you were coming to when you first came to North Carolina in terms of its politics? What have you seen unfold while you've been here?
Well, when I first came here in 2004, I thought that I was coming to a state that was going to be very much like the other states that I had lived in, a nice blend, a growing community with a nice variety of people, but still a very rural population, too, to balance it out.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen it kind of morph. in front of my very eyes. It was a much more welcoming place when I came. It feels less welcoming now.
Less welcoming in what sort of terms? In racial terms, in economic terms, in political terms, in cultural?
Well, no.
You're African-American. Is that what you're talking about, or is it something else?
No, because one of the reasons we chose North Carolina was because there was a large African-American community that had always been here. Mm-hmm. And my family actually originated in North Carolina. So my parents...
Your mom was born here, I think.
She was in Chapel Hill area. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like a homecoming. So no, it wasn't a racial thing per se. It was more, I felt like there was a more us and them. There was, you just got here versus we've always been here.
You
live in the city. We hate you guys in the city because we don't live in the city. Which, when you first came, people would ask you what church you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like that mattered more than anywhere else.
So what's gotten tougher? What's gotten more difficult?
I felt like people were less willing to have a conversation or have commonality if they didn't feel like you met, you checked a box. If you weren't in the same political party or came from the same place,
mm-hmm.
you're one of those northerners or outsiders, mm-hmm. people would just kind of, their eyes would glaze over and they didn't want to talk to you.
There was a time when North Carolina was seen as very cosmopolitan. And in many respects, it is now. I mean, you come to Charlotte, it's a beautiful city. You've got thriving business here. It's very impressive in many ways. And yet the country is watching as these political tensions have just gone up and up and wondering what exactly is going on. You've got people watching and listening from around the country. And I want to turn to some of them. Charlie's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Charlie, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Nice to talk with
Hi.
You again.
You too.
You know, it's very sad what has happened in North Carolina. I moved to North Carolina in 1980. From Los Angeles to begin my journalism career. And at the time, Governor Jim Hunt, probably the most progressive, forward-looking governor in the whole country, you know, Research Triangle Park and all of the innovation that he wanted to bring into North Carolina. But there was always as Ms. Mayfield pointed out, this rural-urban divide. And the other forces, the Republican forces, you know, the Jesse Helms supporters, which came to a head in 1984 in that brutal Senate race.
Of course, also a very, very prominent North Carolina political figure, just as conservative as Jim Hunt was, progressive, liberal.
Exactly. And so we had, you know, North Carolina, like a lot of other states, suffered from this push-pull, you know, between the progressive Democrats and the very conservative Republicans. And so now what's happened in North Carolina is the conservative forces have prevailed. And so they, you know, these your representatives who talk about, you know, these fiscal issues, well, okay, they don't want to just talk about fiscal issues. Now they start bringing in social issues and they start trying to legislate what people can do in the privacy of their own homes. You know, and I think as you embark on this listening tour across the country, you're going to find the same thing is true here in Georgia and in Texas and in a lot of states across the country. And I think that this is important to note because these conservative Republicans, the rural people who, you know, promote guns and, you know, conservative religious beliefs, they're the ones who elected Donald Trump.
Charlie, stand by. Craig Horn responded, Charlie, he knows Charlotte. He's calling from Atlanta. And he sort of raises an idea that maybe there are historically unresolved issues that have come back to the surface and are being worked out here, culturally and politically. I mean, what is causing the new depth of sort of grinding of gears, Craig? How do you describe it? You're talking about fiscal situation that you've worked on, and it looks much better now. So Republicans have done that. At the same time, you've got all this tension and a feeling of deep division that would seem much less when Charlie was here in Charlotte. What surfaced that's driving this?
I don't think it's unique to North Carolina. I think it's surfaced all across the country and perhaps all around the world. We're seeing really social upheaval everywhere. It's a result, I believe, of what we might call the Great Migration, folks that have moved out of the North for other parts of the country, for weather, for family. We are a much more mobile society than we've ever been before.
Yeah.
That's changed a lot of things. I would suggest that probably in my district, we have maybe 15% people that actually are from that area that live in my district.
Like Duncan here, native of Charlotte, but sometimes that's described as a rarity these days.
It is a rarity.
I actually grew up in his district.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So you're that rare native, but here we are.
And I moved here from Maryland. I didn't move here till 2005, so I didn't get here till after she got here.
But what happened, Craig? Because there was a time in which North Carolina specifically welcomed that in-migration, said, come, join this great economic and cultural and climate wonder place that we've got here.
No question. We did welcome it. I was welcomed. They were happy to sell me a very expensive home after
sure
I was
were.
Able to sell my home in Maryland and come down here and buy a very expensive home. And then, like a lot of people, we got what we want. We don't want any more. Thank you. I don't want anyone else to come here. The farmers sold their land for big numbers.
Yep.
The farmers that didn't sell now want to sell, and all the people that moved here like me are saying, no, I don't want you to sell. Mm-hmm. I love looking out at your farmland.
But it's more than real estate prices, Luana. You are at a place now where people – it seems that they barely speak to one another sometimes. And in politics, literally, I mean, things get done in the middle of the night. They get done in a way that's outside of a precedent here. What has resurfaced? Is there some historical baggage that has come back up? Is it a great migration? I mean, Craig's right. All over the world, you see movements of population.
I agree with
that. Is it stuck a fork into old problems or created new ones? What's happened?
I think it's a combination, because I think when you think about it, I first moved to Charlotte in 1988.
Yeah.
So when I first moved here, and I moved here from South Florida, from Miami, it was very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the
Charlotte
was very black and white. So coming from Miami, where you had multiple cultures that were embraced and that were welcome, but also they had their own challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Moving here and seeing when we first started seeing the major influx of the Latino community and others' communities and thinking about after Hurricane Rita and Katrina and the influx. And then in 2007, we had a local person that thought that they were going to make a mark for themselves in Washington, D.C., and we brought ICE. And we brought the impact of ICE into the Charlotte area regarding immigration.
Immigration enforcement.
Exactly.
But did you feel in the years after 88, as you saw North Carolina evolving, Charlotte evolving and more, this is headed toward a sort of harmonious, great future where everybody's going to be more and more welcome?
In the beginning, I did.
Did you see this sort of fall off the cliff into political deep division coming?
I would have never thought that I would be – one, I never thought about politics. So that was interesting in itself. But
it has a way of showing up sooner or later, doesn't it?
I definitely have seen a difference. So I have friends, because I think you asked the perfect question earlier. In your personal circle, how many people are outside of you, whether that's ethnic, socioeconomic, and or political?
Mm-hmm.
So I have really good Republican, extremely conservative Republican friends, extremely liberal friends, and we can have these conversations, but that's because we have real relationship. If you cannot have a conversation to understand that sometimes you're going to agree to disagree, but also recognize that, as was mentioned, okay, some financial changes were made, but this is the same General Assembly that gave $1 billion worth of tax breaks to the wealthy while creating additional taxes on the working force. So if you go get your hair cut, before you didn't get charged for certain services, but these are mandatory things that you need, you're now paying taxes on that. Our unemployment rate, especially in minority communities, is still extremely high. We still have that good old boy system. That good old boy system never left North Carolina. And what I feel like I'm seeing is an insurgence where that idea that we heard across the national landscape of make America great again, somewhere we forgot that America was founded on immigrants who came to a land that already had natives. And we decided that now we're here. Okay, we don't need anyone else to come in, but that's the culture of who we are. So the challenge that I have, that I had to experience a couple of months ago that I'm not proud of, is I went through a period where, with all the circles and all the people I know, that as an African-American female first, because that's what you see when I walk through the door, being afraid to be in a room that was majority white people. Because we have seen a level of anger that I have never experienced in my almost 47 years of life. I read about it. I saw it on TV. I saw it in a documentary. But to actually live it was actually frightening for a period until I was able to move through it.
Duncan, why has that happened? What has changed?
I don't think it's anything specific with North Carolina. I think that we are in a...
I'm willing to believe there's national trends here. I mean, that's part of why we're going all across the country.
The amount of change...
But it's vivid here.
The amount of change that's happened. I think North Carolina may be a lightning rod or a poster child for it just because our legislature has become rather active.
That is a very mild word.
if we look at everything that's changed in the last 10 years,
yeah.
Facebook, social media, Facebook Live,
yeah.
We are seeing so much so fast. People are putting up, you know, one-sentence blurbs on Facebook that are enraging their friends, and they are entering into these self-selected echo chambers, and it's getting worse. You know,
but why isn't all that social media working to bring people closer together, to help them understand each other more?
Internet,
you can see a lot about each other.
On
there.
The internet, it's really easy to be mean.
Well, that's true.
And I think that we are seeing so much of that now. And I got on Facebook 12 years ago, which is weird. But now they've brought in these memories things.
Yeah,
and I look
and
back at things I used
back.
To put up on Facebook, yeah, yeah. And I'm just so embarrassed. I'm like, oh, Duncan, come
were you
on.
Mean or you were too—
I wasn't mean, but I was so self-righteous.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am right about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think you hit a major point because all of this was happening across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But now social media has given the opportunity to immediately share it with the world.
Oh, boy.
So
and it can be so bad. I mean, the stuff out of Chicago in the last couple of days, just terrible. We see this beat. Beating of this poor kid, but that's not all. I mean, we have seen police police killing, police dying, blacks, whites, you name it.
We've seen young man rape a woman. She would have never known if someone didn't come in and help her. And our system said that that's okay. And you have a judge tell him, well, we don't want to mess up your career. That would have never been known in North Carolina if we didn't have social media. Only that town would have known what happened.
So why don't we come together around these things and come together rather than retreating into camps and pulling apart? I want to get Amber in here. Amber, what are you thinking?
My mother, who I mentioned, she's from here originally. Yeah. She's here with us now. And she says that this all reminds her of what it was like decades ago.
What do you mean? Before the Civil Rights Movement?
She points out that at that time in the 50s and the 40s, it was palatable hate. It was people. The world was filled with people who just hated people. They just hated people. They didn't mind telling you. They didn't mind dividing things up. You all stay over here. We'll stay over here.
Why should that come back now to a place like North Carolina, which has done so well in the new era? Is it a kind of a good old boy resurgence? Is it just too much on the outside? People need time to digest this? Is that even fair to ask that? We're all Americans here.
I think people forget, and I think people forgot. And I think that there was a time, maybe in the 70s and 80s, when people did the work of staying open, of knowing what happens, what it can be like if we don't talk, if we don't respect each other as individuals.
Yeah.
And then people forgot. And so now people want to consider people as categories again. They don't want to respect other people's opinions. They want to jump to hate and anger because they forgot that where that leads you is it getting worse and worse and people getting more and more divided.
Let me go to Lynn in Banner Elk, North Carolina. Lynn, thank you for calling. You're on the air with our panel here in Charlotte.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, Lynn?
Well, I'm calling because I'm a new transplant to the area. I come from the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
All right.
And Banner Elk is a very rural part of western North Carolina, very blue-collar, hardworking people. And when I moved here, I came in with a lot of preconceived notions about the religious right and, gun-toting, Bible-thumping people. And these people have really taught me how good they are and how kind and welcoming they've been to my family. And
yet
I know that they're staunch Trump supporters. And so I'm trying to reconcile the fact that here are people that I've come to love and who have shown to me to be really good people. And yet I can't have a conversation with them about their political beliefs or my political beliefs without risking friendship.
Why not? I mean, if you bring it up, what happens, Lynn? Are you just too afraid even to bring it up?
To be honest, I'm too afraid to bring it up. And I've chosen to just be a kind individual and hope that my friends will learn that because I'm a liberal, but because I'm a kind and humble person, that not all liberals are, you know, abortion fighting crazies, just like, you know, liberals think about the other side. It's through inner relationships that we can learn from each other. No conversation that I have with, a local here is going to convince them that Planned Parenthood isn't killing babies.
Yeah. Lynn, I so appreciate your call. I mean, Craig, what has brought us to this place where we can't even sort of discuss? There's Lynn. She's calling from your state. She's afraid even to talk with her neighbors, who she respects in many ways about politics, because she's just afraid that could be the end of the friendship.
I'm very disappointed. I think one of our challenges is today is to how do we return civil discourse and public engagement to our communities. We have become polarized for lots of reasons, and as I said before, it's not unique to North Carolina.
Yeah.
The Banner Elk area I know very well. I love Banner Elk. And I came here from the Washington suburbs as well.
Yeah.
So I have great appreciation for what she's saying. I think there's lots of reasons for it. I've tried to recap it myself. Part of it is the fact that even at our highest levels, we don't talk to each other very well in the General Assembly. The two sides, Republicans and Democrats, used to go to dinner with each other. Well, that's been cut out, a lot of it because of, I believe, misplaced values on.
And you can take that right to the top. We've got to take a short break. Okay. We're on a national listening tour here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are kicking off today a year-long On Point listening tour of America. First stop, Charlotte, North Carolina. We are listening for what people think of our politics now, our priorities, our future in what has become one of the most divided, politically embattled states in this country, North Carolina. I've got a panel, wonderful panel of four North Carolinians with us here today. Amber Logan, Duncan Wilson, Luana Mayfield, Craig Horn, right across the political spectrum, all kinds of ages and phases of life, race, economic, you name it. We've got it all going on right here at the table, and we're trying to hash out what is behind the tension that has come not only to North Carolina, but very vividly to North Carolina in recent years of politics. You can join us today. What do you hear in the North Carolina story? A state that once really worked, now pretty bitterly divided. Are we locked in a winner-take-all national battle here, a state battle here? Have we really lost our common ground? How do we get it back? Do we get it back? And what if we don't? Craig Horn is in the state General Assembly here, representative there. Luana Mayfield is a Charlotte City Councilwoman in her third term. Duncan Wilson, financial planner, former attorney with us today, and Amber Logan, independent college counselor, all at the table with us in Charlotte. Craig Horn, you were just talking about what's come into sort of civility here. But, of course, that's very important. I mean, without civility, how do we talk these things through? But it's also about what's actually happening. You have federal courts coming in and saying that the General Assembly has gerrymandered voting districts into such a tight kind of formation that they are now harming racial minorities and locking in one party. It's hard, you know, if someone's got your toe in a torture grip, it's hard to talk civilly to them. You're a Republican state legislator. Are you willing to say, you know, maybe we've gone too far in redistricting North Carolina? Let's loosen that up a little bit so we've got more competition in our electoral districts. It might make more Democrats more willing to sit down and talk.
Well, first of all, the whole concept of gerrymandering is, I think, a little amusing. Parties have been doing that since parties have been drawing district lines.
But there's degrees and degrees. We've got computer programs now who can lock it up so tight that you cannot change the system. And you've got federal courts striking down voting restrictions and gerrymandered districts. So, I mean, it's an issue.
I find it interesting that how those federal courts work, because we have some federal circuit courts that say, gee, if you would have followed North Carolina's example, you would have been fine. And we have other federal courts saying North Carolina's example is not fine.
So you're not willing to give an inch on this?
Not yet.
Well,
I mean, you're in politics, Luana, here in Charlotte. If the Republican state legislators are going to stick with that tightly districted plan that they've got. Can you have a civil conversation?
It becomes extremely difficult because it is a my way or the highway mentality. And that's what we're seeing across the state. When you tell municipalities that they cannot govern what's best for their local area, what's good for Asheville is not necessarily the same thing that's going to be good legislation for Burke County, or that's going to be good for Charlotte, or that's going to be good for Wilkes.
And, of course, this is what the legislature has done with HB2 and transgender rights.
But we have to go back long before this and start looking at the fact that since 2008, we lost on the national level. We lost 64 Democratic senators. You have lost over 940 Democratic representatives across the nation.
At the state level.
Yes.
So maybe Democrats are on the wrong beam.
But no, it's more of that conversation of, I'm not going to blame it all on the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I'm going to blame it on the individuals. Because as citizens, we're letting people who are extremely conservative on one end of the spectrum or the other end get into office, and they're creating legislation.
But what if they look at you and say, well, Ms. Mayfield, you're extreme on the other end of the spectrum.
Right. And if I'm on one extreme, and I have a partner of the opposite party on the other extreme, mm-hmm. we're never going to get any work done. It was moderates that moved this entire nation forward. It was moderates that moved our
state forward. Where are they?
That is the question. And when you have gerrymandering at the table,
yep.
there's no room for that moderate
voice. They can't get elected anymore.
They cannot get elected anymore. And I think about my district. My council district is over 120,000 residents.
Mm-hmm.
My council district goes from chronically underemployed, unemployed, to upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
As your representative, whether you're Republican, unaffiliated, or you never go in and vote, if you call me and it falls in my preview on city council, my first job is to try to, you might not like the answer, but my first job is to try to give you a response and be representative to you.
So you're the last living moderate in North Carolina? Is that what you're saying?
I am not the last living, but I need more of them to actually run for office successfully.
Stephen in Havana, Illinois. Stephen, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, very good. Thank you for having me and taking my call. I listen to all the conversations constantly in politics. Sometimes it's important to realize what the Democratic Republic is all about. It isn't about I have to seize control and democracy only works if I have domination over the consent and consensus is absolute, no matter how extreme your beliefs are. I had a friend of mine say that liberals are the problem. Well, if people are the problem, then how do we talk to each other? And what's liberal and what's conservative? I've heard people call liberals baby killers, or they think abortion is good. I don't think abortion is good. I think abortion is awful. I just don't believe the state should be able to enforce a pregnancy. I don't believe I have the right to tell somebody when they should be pregnant. Or how do you end abortion? You end abortion by giving women the strength, which is a covenant with God, the strength to decide when they're ready to have a baby. Then you don't
Stephen,
have abortion.
How do we get out of this standoff, though, Stephen? I can hear that. We're all here, and people are nodding along here. I can hear that you're watching carefully. How do we get out of this standoff in North Carolina or right across the country?
Well, people have to start believing in democracy and a republic again. You got to start believing in people listening and working towards consent and consensus and understanding each other. I have a gentleman talking about gun rights. I have nothing against people having guns, but the Second Amendment doesn't just say everybody has the right to have guns. It says a well-regulated militia. That means everybody has a responsibility to have a gun to make sure that it doesn't get in the hands of a child, or that they make sure that that gun doesn't get involved in crime.
Stephen, you sound like a very reasonably minded man. I want to take it to my panel here in Charlotte. They're listening carefully, too. And Amber, you've got your hand way up in the air here.
Well, it just makes me think about a situation. For example, here in North Carolina, I know of Senator Horn, even though he's not my representative, because mm-hmm. I'm a part of an organization called Jack and Jill of America, the South Charlotte chapter.
This encourages African-American kids to get involved in civic life.
Yes, yes. And Senator Horn, came and spoke to our community.
Good man.
And so that was really great. And so we talk about listening. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing. but one of the things he and some of his colleagues have also done is they've allowed our children to serve as pages, mm-hmm. as Senate pages and House pages.
That builds understanding. That builds familiarity.
But what the experience that my daughter had on both the floor of the House, I'm sorry, the legislature mm-hmm. and the Senate in Raleigh, was she was horrified
by
the fact that they don't listen to each other, that one party's speaker would be speaking about something and the others would not even be following what they're saying. One senator was on her computer playing Candy Crush. She was horrified and she wanted to know what is going on in Raleigh that these people don't even give each other the basic courtesy and respect to listen to them on the floor. They just vote in their party lines, and what no matter what people say, there's no conversation. And that was really it really upset her.
Disillusioned from the mouths of babes, kind of innocence right there. Yes,
it's disappointing to me as well. First of all, I'm in the House rather than in the Senate, so
yes.
I'm glad to know that the senators are playing Candy Crush and not my
wife.
Oh, yeah, no Candy Crush where you are. All right.
Part of it is we do demonize.
Yeah.
We demonize people that don't agree with us.
Why is that happening?
And I wish I knew why that was happening. Some of it is you can hide behind all of the with Twitter and Facebook. You can hide. It's easier to
hide.
Is
it a cultural thing where it's just become cheapened? That kind of language has become easier to toss out there? Everything's like a fake wrestling match?
It's almost a throwback to the founding of the country, because members of Washington's cabinet all owned newspapers and called each other the most horrible things. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, but they also wrote a fairly decorous constitution, and they also conceived a republic that had a kind of pioneering beauty to it.
I think back in the day—
not without its warts, but still.
The Gutenberg movable type press was fairly new back then, and pamphlets were the Facebook of their day. You know, Thomas Paine's Common Sense. I think we're in that type of period where— everyone can disseminate so much information so fast.
But they made a new country. They made a constitution. I'm not sure that we're producing something of comparable beauty here necessarily.
But I think it's about being public servants. There was a clear understanding and a desire to do good for all people. They went in with a public servant mindset, and that is not what you're seeing from a lot of legislators today. And for the few that are, they're drowned out when they're really concerned about constituency services.
And Americans watching this and saying, where's my interest in this? Sarah, in Hingham, Massachusetts. Sarah, thank you for calling. You're on the air in Charlotte.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm calling, like you said, from Hingham, Massachusetts. I was born in Concord, North Carolina. I got a bachelor's degree from UNC Asheville and I chose Boston University School of Theology for my master's degree. And I only looked at schools in states with good LGBT rights. And I just want to make sure lawmakers know that there are people like me who are very well-educated, very employable, leaving the state. And I have a theology degree.
Did you leave North Carolina? You left North Carolina because of that issue, of LGBT rights issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I hate that we lost you.
Yeah.
So, gone to North Carolina. I would hope to eventually move back to North Carolina, but I just want lawmakers to know that not only do businesses make choices, but also individuals do. And I'll just take any other answers off the air. Thanks a lot.
Sir, I appreciate your call. I mean, Duncan, here's a fellow North Carolinian who's now no longer here on this front, LGBTQ. And I wonder what that leaves you thinking about how and why that's become such a big issue here that some of your fellow Carolinians driven out of the state.
I think that so much has changed on that front in the last 10 years that we're seeing pushback from it, which I think is probably normal. You're going to see some pushback. But, if you're against LGBT rights, you need to accept that that war has been lost and it's time to move on. So I think in time, things will change. The members of the legislature will change. I know that, speaking for myself and my friends, young Republicans are on the opposite side of the issue as the legislature. We're more concerned with our student loans than what people are doing in their bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to move on from that issue and respect those rights.
Luana, you're part of this community.
I am.
Do you see North Carolina, as Duncan says, saying, hey, this is a settled issue now, time to just accept and deal with it or even embrace it, or is it going back the other way?
Unfortunately, what we saw with the creation of HB2 and the fact that it not only pinpointed and targeted one specific segment of the community, the transgender community, mm-hmm. one, without understanding, two, without recognizing what it is to be a transgender woman or a transgender male, mm-hmm. and to create legislation that said you are less than. For me, discrimination, period, is not okay. You could have easily changed trans or lesbian, gay, bi, mm-hmm. trans with black, Negro, or even going further back. Because these were the same language, the same talking points that we used to say that blacks were not worthy, that blacks should not have protections, and to say you better not mix with, marry, or create children yeah. within our race.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge is, at the end of the day, we were a business-conscious state. We wanted the best of the best. We grew on that premise.
Mm-hmm.
The best of the best is just that. Laws should not be created at any point that is going to discriminate, but specifically tell lies about that discrimination and create a whole segment of the committee of a community and try to label them as pedophiles when we know all studies, all research, everything shows, one, pedophiles are overwhelmingly heterosexual, and two, they're in your immediate family. So to tell a transgender woman or a transgender man that you're not worthy to be protected, there are clear problems, because laws should be created to protect not the majority. Laws are created for the minority.
Craig Horn, you're in the legislature. Are legislators ready to hear this?
First of all, I, as a citizen of North Carolina, as a voter, as an adult, I'm 73 years old. I respect everyone's rights. I don't call anyone a pedophile that isn't in fact a pedophile. I don't use broad sweeping generalizations. I don't demonize other people, either by party, race, gender, or anything else. I'm interested in protecting everyone's rights and everyone's privacy.
Our time is very short. We just had a call from a former North Carolinian who said she's gone until it changes. What do you say to her?
I say to her, please come back and help us change it, if that's what she believes.
It's not hard to change.
Amber, how do we get out of this? We're going to take this listening tour right across the country. We want to take North Carolina lessons as we go. How do we get out of this kind of headlock that divides?
We have to honor and respect each other, have conversations, and understand that we're not all going to be exactly alike, and that's what makes us awesome. And we need to make room at the table for everyone, and we need to have a culture of listening. And people who, and it was the House, by the way, I mean the legislature, the representatives, I'm sorry, not the Senate, they need to listen. We need to model listen, because our children are watching, and they're packing their bags, and I'm trying to make them stay. They want to go. They want no parts. And if that's what we want, if we want to run our next generation away, we can continue to make people feel like they're not welcome here.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being with us today here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't say that we have a resolution here, but this kind of conversation across party lines,
that's really important, where it's, that conversation.
Exactly.
If we can take what we just experienced in this room mm-hmm. out into community, out into the world, that's the answer to your question of how we make change.
We want it honest and candid, as civil as we can make it, but really real.
And respectful.
And respectful, but real. And on the table, and I think we got close to that today, and I'm so grateful for it. Luana Mayfield, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Craig Horn, a real pleasure to have you. Duncan Wilson, thanks for coming in.
Certainly.
And Amber Logan, great to have you as well. Listeners, I want to thank everyone around the country listening this hour and participating on air and online. We are going to do more of this, listening to you, digging in. Our next stop on our Listening to America tour is Detroit out of WDET, February 17th. See you there. Thanks for joining us today. From Charlotte, North Carolina, in the studios of WFAE, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.